I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
All right. David Culley had some things to say about Davis Mills that had a lot of people excited, but for whatever reason has John Lopez upset. Before we hear why Lopez is upset, here's David Culley talking about Davis Mills, rookie quarterback for your Houston Texans, and the first look he got at him over the weekend.
Nick's staff did a great job earmarking a guy that fit what a quarterback in this NFL is all about. This guy, obviously he didn't play as much football as some of the other guys because of the COVID situation in the Pac-12, but we really love what he's all about. We love all the intangibles that he has. He's a prototype NFL quarterback. And we feel good to have him. He's smart. He can make all the throws. And we feel good and feel fortunate that we were able to get him when we got him.
The thing is, if only you actually had a guy that was proved, that has proven that he can do all those things. Oh, that's right, you did. It just rubbed me the wrong way. Two things, first of all, on Davis Mills. I continue to watch what he's doing and what they're saying and understand that they have high hopes and understand that he's a draft pick, so of course they're going to say nice things about him. But he is really behind the curve. There's a reason he got drafted where he did. They didn't steal Davis Mills. They valued him as a third-round pick and took him there, and he's got a bunch of question marks. But you're talking as if Deshaun Watson never happened. It goes back to my World War II thing, you know, history books in Germany. They just skip from 1939 to 1945. It's like you're skipping the fact that you had this guy at an all-pro level. I'm not saying he was all-pro, Texters, but he was one of the five best quarterbacks in the NFL, and you're like, well, we got one now. You had one. You had Deshaun Watson, and the guy who helped screw it up is still sitting at the right hand, literally, of Nick Caserio.
But is that more of a you thing than it is a them thing? Because don't we have to forget about Deshaun Watson? Like, it is. Don't some people need to just forget and not compare Davis Mills to Deshaun Watson? If you're expecting to see Deshaun Watson-like stuff from Davis Mills at any point in his career, you're fighting a losing battle. Stranger things have happened, but you're fighting a losing battle. So do you just kind of need to, for your own sanity, do you need to forget about this, or is this just going to be something you never forget about?
Eventually,
because it pisses me off, too.
It
I
does.
Get it.
It should. And look, eventually everybody's going to move on. I don't think it's going to be anytime soon. I think the first time and the last time Davis Mills takes the field in 2021, we're still going to be thinking about, man, what happened? How did the Texans screw this up? You have to project. You have to develop. You have to hope. You have to pray that Davis Mills becomes a plausible, serviceable NFL quarterback when you had a great one and you screwed it up.
Is that good hope, though? I mean, is that realistic? We're talking about a third-round guy.
That's what I'm saying. And that's my second point on this. I'm not sold on Davis Mills until I see this cat, you know, at least half a season, because you can talk about all, I mean, the NFL is littered with third round quarterbacks who were busts. Flat out.
There's only one starting quarterback in the NFL that was drafted in the third round, and that's Russell Wilson.
Yes.
Now, Dak Prescott was in the fourth, but I'm talking about specifically the third round. Russell Wilson's the only guy. And right. Russell Wilson started 39 more games in college than Davis Mills did. And the only reason he slid to the third round is because of his size.
Yeah.
And that's it. It was his size, and there was this perception back then where people weren't as open, even that recent, as open to the style of play that guys like Russell Wilson and so on and so forth play. But that That there's a big difference between Russell Wilson and Davis Mills. And that's why when John McClain is going to join us tomorrow, we'll hear from him in a sec when he joins us tomorrow presented by Horn Solutions. When he throws out this Dak Prescott, Russell Wilson stuff, I just roll my eyes because outside of when they were actually selected, their path towards success, and that's even pretending that Davis Mills is going to be anything, it's nothing like that.
Right.
Like it is nothing like those guys. Those guys started 38 and 39 games more than Davis Mills, respectively, in college. And there were question marks about them for different reasons. So I just don't think there's any comparison. I don't think it's realistic to even expect to evaluate this guy this much. Now, have stranger things happen? Sure. A lot of times there is unrealized potential, but I'm not expecting a ton from Davis Mills.
No, and they're sitting there saying, well, we'll see what we have in Davis Mills. We're excited about it. And it may not be fair, but it's just human nature. I'm going to be thinking about Deshaun Watson and how they screwed that up for a long time. Eventually, we'll all move in. But they're saying, we'll see what we have in him, ignoring the fact that they still have on the roster that they're not even talking about a guy that is 10 times as good at minimum. It's just frustrating and angering.
Well, I don't know when that's going to go away. Quite honestly, right. That could be something that lingers with you for 15 years. I mean, it's going to be very hard to find a Deshaun Watson anytime soon, right. If ever. Like it took a long time to get that in the first place. So it's going to be hard if that's where your mind's at. And I'm not saying that you're wrong, and I'm not saying you're alone. I think there's a lot of people on the text line 713-572-4610. Who feel the same way. But if that's your mindset, you're going to be pissed off for a long time, John.
Yeah.
Long time.
And I'm fully expecting to be. I really am. This is why I said the other day, and you didn't agree with me, but I know it's going to be the case. All those feelings, all those texts, all those calls, all that anger collectively across the city of Houston is going to be reignited when they actually do pull the trigger and Deshaun Watson actually is no longer a Houston Texan.
The only thing that's going to keep me sane while all this anger is going on, it is going to be what they get for Deshaun Watson. Because part of the reason and the main reason that Deshaun Watson is no longer here to me is that you had a football idiot in Bill O'Brien. You had Jack Easterby helping him out, so I don't want to let him off the hook. But you had the worst GM in NFL history with the worst two-year display that you will ever see.
Yeah.
An organization be run. You had him in charge, and that's basically what ran off the best asset you can have in sports and definitely in football in Deshaun Watson. So if I see Nick Caserio trade Deshaun Watson, regardless of why,
yeah,
and I see a immediate eye roll when it comes to the return, like I had with Jadeveon Clowney, like I had with DeAndre Hopkins, and like I had with a lot of this stuff, the Laremy Tunsil do, if I have that, then that's where my sanity is going to leave. But I'm looking at this as, again, I'm not forgetting, but I'm at least giving Caserio somewhat of a clean slate in that he's going to have to clean up a significant mess. But if this trade is made and the haul is not nearly what it should be, then I'm going to be more ticked off than you are times 100.
Well, then let's remember, the guy who's going to trade Deshaun Watson is Nick Caserio. That's going to be on his resume, the guy who traded Deshaun Watson. Now, we all know there was a lot that happened before he even stepped foot in that building, but nevertheless, the results, the return that you get on him, what those players ultimately become, those draft picks that you receive, you know, is all going to be on his resume. So, yeah, he's going to be tied in with this. And then there's the whole Jack Easterby thing. To their credit, the Houston Texans have done a really good job just insulating him from everything and hoping that, you know, ignore it and the heat will go away, but he's still there. And even you have said recently, well, he's not really that big of a factor anymore. Yes, he is.
Personnel-wise. No, I think he's a factor. I don't think he has anything to do with personnel. I truly believe that. I think he has a lot to do with a lot, but I don't think he has anything to do with personnel.
I do. It's just a difference of opinion.
Based on what, though?
Based on what I've seen and what his track record is, and really more than anything, when has he ever taken a step back from any job or thought that he couldn't do a job? He's always ambitious, always trying to gain more power. That's with Bill O'Brien. It's certainly with a guy that
his
he brought in.
His power is high. I think he has a personnel guy that he actually trusts.
He was the biggest reason Nick Caserio was here.
Yeah, he had a huge hand in that. There you go. Yes, but I also think Nick Caserio, I don't think it's like a situation where Ben McDaniels ends up coaching receivers because he knows somebody. I think Nick Caserio had a resume that validated him being hired as a general manager. So I think that's that. Yeah, there are some guys that come here and they get jobs because of who they know. But yes, I think it had a factor, but I also think Nick Caserio's actual body of work and the resume validated him being hired as a general manager.
I also think the best thing for Nick Caserio, look, it's not going to happen. I'm just saying the best thing for Nick Caserio would still be, just like everybody else, if Jack Easterby wasn't here.
Yeah, well,
because things are going to go bad. We know things are going to go bad personnel-wise. There's going to be some draft busts. Maybe it's Davis Mills. Maybe it's someone else. The team's going to lose. They're going to have players that are going to, you know, fall short of expectations. And it's going to be on Nick Caserio, but, you know, somebody's going to get fired. It's that Jack Easterby, you know, cloud is always going to be hanging over.
Oh, it's a stench.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a stench, and let's be honest. And I think Jack Easterby, if he looks in the mirror and he truly evaluates himself, I think he's got to understand there's a large portion of Texans fans that will never look at him favorably. It's never going to happen because he did have a hand in that two-year run where this organization was run worse than you've ever seen over a two-year period than I've seen in NFL history, and you ran off a franchise quarterback even before this legal stuff came. So no matter what does happen, there is a stench, and Jack Easterby's reputation is what it is, and it's never going to – he's never going to win over a large portion of this fan base. But what is success? If it's not measured by wins, what is success for the Houston Texans in – 2021? Is it just getting to evaluate Davis Mills? John McClain, who joins us tomorrow, 1040, presented by Horn Solutions, asked that question to David Culley.
How important is it for you guys to get a good look at Davis Mills this season because of how much that could impact your 2022 draft?
Well, we're not looking at it like that, John. We're looking at it like there's going to be competition at all positions. This is a new football team here. And basically, We've created competition all around this football team, and not just at the quarterback position, but basically at all positions. And that's why you see so many guys on this football team right now that hadn't been here, is that we're going to let things play out in training camp. We're going to go from there. And then the best players that give us the best chance to win are the ones that we're going to put on the football field, regardless of position.
Okay, so is there competition at the quarterback position? I just assumed there wasn't. I assume Tyrod Taylor's the week one starter. Does Davis Mills really have a chance to win this starting job? I mean, we're talking about a guy who started 11 games in college. I know Tyrod Taylor has been a guy that's, you know, passed the torch to Josh Allen, passed the torch to Baker Mayfield, passed the torch to Justin Herbert. I assume that there's competition all over the place at every position, but I just assume that Tyrod Taylor would be the starter week one. Do you think there's actually a chance Davis Mills starts week one?
No.
Yeah, me neither.
No, I don't. But I think they've also had the conversation with Tyrod Taylor, telling him, look, this is your job. We expect you to be the starter. We also expect you to understand that we drafted Davis Mills. You know, that old conversation. So I think Davis Mills is going to start sooner rather than later. I do think that.
How soon?
I keep going back to the bye week. Final eight games of the year.
So week 10.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you here on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. We got lied to last week. I don't want to say that I'm offended, but I am, let's just say, not surprised. We'll tell you who lied to us about the Deshaun Watson situation next.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
All right, apparently ESPN has acquired audio and text messages that prove that a member of Tony Busby's legal staff has reached out to Rusty Harden and they want to find a resolution in the Deshaun Watson situation. This contradicts what we were told last week per Mark Berman from Tony Busby that a settlement is nowhere close. Not surprised, but Sarah Barshab of ESPN put this out, and somehow ESPN got hold of audio and visual / text message that proves that a settlement could be coming.
Yeah.
Or it's at least being discussed.
Well, independent of each other, you and I have both talked to people who have pretty much confirmed that the settlement has been ongoing, the settlement discussion has been ongoing. You know what's interesting to me is it's almost like you broke up with me. No, I broke up with you. No, I broke up with you. It's like, why is it so important to them? I guess there's a legal reason. To say that they're not the ones, is it a sign of weakness? Is it a sign of strength or loss of strength, you know, to admit that you actually have reached out and tried to talk about a settlement, especially from Tony Busby's perspective? Because everybody knows when you have a civil lawsuit, the only judgment is money. You know, there's no jail time on a civil lawsuit. It's money. Or maybe another factor is, you know, if you start talking about a settlement from Rusty Harden's perspective, that you're maybe giving credence to a criminal investigation. I mean, there's probably a number of good, solid legal reasons why they don't want to be the first one to say they're talking about settlement, but it's just a little silly.
What are the pros and cons of not settling? I think with Deshaun Watson, it goes back to just putting this behind you. Mm-hmm. And there's been the acknowledgement by his camp, courtesy of Rusty Harden's own stuff that he's put out there, that he needed to learn a lesson, and they were willing to negotiate with the initial accuser, Ms. Solis, just not for $100,000, but for something. So put it behind you, not get as much information out there, avoiding the, quote, 50 hours of cross-examination from Tony Busby. We know what the pros are there. What are the cons from a legal perspective for Deshaun Watson, and then we'll go to Tony Busby after that.
For not saying that they're talking settlement?
Well, for not settling.
Well, the cons are financially driven. And maybe that's another factor that I forgot to mention, why you don't say you're the first one that you don't admit that you're talking about a settlement. Leverage. I think what he's trying to do by not settling is to punch holes in more and more stories of these 22 women. So maybe, you know, if you don't settle 22, you settle 16 or 14 or something like that, and that's a financial gain for you.
Maybe this is my own legal ignorance. I don't really know. Can Tony Busby throw in the towel on some of these? Like, when they discuss this, like, let's say, and again, we don't know what happened. All 22 could be right. All 22 could be lying. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That's for the courts to decide. But they've insinuated, they being Rusty Harden and Deshaun Watson's team, that, you know, some of these aren't valid and it's a huge reach and so on and so forth. We've seen some of the leaks. Can they discuss, like, Rusty Harden and Tony Busby and say, all right, accuser number 20, come on. Like, are you serious? And then they just throw in the white towel on that? Or
absolutely.
If Deshaun settled, like, can you trim one accuser down one at a time? Like, how does that work?
I think that's what they're trying to do. But they're doing it with hard and, you know, hard evidence. Like, look, what number did you say? 16? Accuser number 16.
Whatever, yeah.
All right? This is the evidence that we have that refutes what you're saying she saw or experienced or the text messages she has or whatever. This is one we're going to fight. And so you just kind of, it's a negotiation, obviously. It's a settlement negotiation. So you're trying to punch holes in all as many stories as you can. So from Deshaun's perspective, you do that as much as you can and try to reduce the damage, so to speak.
But I wonder if Tony, if that's like one of the things that's in the way. Like, I wonder what the, if they are trying to get this settlement, is it about the amount? I'm sure it always comes down to the amount. Is it about the principle of, yeah, my camp might admit that I need to learn a lesson and we were willing to negotiate mm-hmm. with the initial accuser? Because they've admitted. I mean, that look, like, all you can do is focus on facts here, and you mm-hmm. can try to, you can try to speculate educationally and responsibly, but they've admitted that when it comes to Ashley Solis, regardless of what they admitted and what extreme they admitted, like mm-hmm. It's in the words of Athletes First, and Rusty Harden's the one who put this out there. It wasn't Tony Busby, but they've said, okay, we're willing to negotiate with Ashley Solis. We don't want to give her $100,000 as she was reportedly officially asking, courtesy of the email and everything.
Yeah.
But there is a price that we're willing to go, and he does need to learn a lesson. So they've already acknowledged that. So do you just go down the line and say, well, here, 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 here? I've never, I've never seen 22 accusers before.
Right. I also think it's because they're not just negotiating this settlement for Deshaun Watson right now. I mean, you just talked about it. I did as well. Some of the reasons that they want to reduce the number and get some of these accusers, these plaintiffs out of the way or eliminated, you know, from the case. It's also they're negotiating for Deshaun Watson's future and his status as a player. He's going to be hounded by this, shadowed by this for a long, long time. But if they put in, and I think this is one of the bigger kind of discrepancies or disputes that they have, how they're going to word any settlement agreement. How are they going to word? They don't want to put, Deshaun Watson's camp does not want to put in there any wording that would admit any kind of guilt. Obviously, Tony Busby wants something in there from Deshaun Watson acknowledging he did
something
wrong.
Which is why it's weird that Rusty Harden, and maybe he was being proactive here because he didn't want Busby to be the one to put it out. But it is kind of weird that when Rusty Harden put out that email between Athletes First and the Busby firm at first, they acknowledged that he, quote, and you heard Busby go on a rant about this, he needs to, quote, learn a lesson.
Yeah.
And that they were willing to negotiate at some point there. So there was like Rusty Harden and them could talk about, you know, Tony Busby wanted to negotiate. But, and again, this was pre-Rusty Harden. So I want to make that clear. But his camp, his management was willing to negotiate initially with Ashley Solis.
Yeah, but you can, quote, learn a lesson without admitting that you did something potentially illegal. You know, you can say, I was in a bad... I think that's what it is. I think they're like, I should have behaved better, but I didn't do anything that was necessarily... I just should have been put myself in a better situation. And that I think that's where the big dispute is right now.
You're right about negotiating for the future because the terminology here and what is said, I mean, regardless of what when it happens or... I don't even think it's a matter of if, but when it does happen, let's say Deshaun goes to Philadelphia or Miami or Las Vegas or Denver or wherever, one of these spots, they're going to have to take on, it's going to be fresh to them. We've been dealing with it for a while here with the Deshaun thing,
but
everything's going to come front and center. Like you're going to have radio stations and just name a team, name a city.
Denver.
Right, Denver. You're going to be reading these accusers like statements and stuff, and it's going to be new to you. So although it's old to us, quote, old news from 2 months ago, like you're going to be reading that. It's going to be front and center. And how this thing gets settled, how much information is out, how it's worded is going to be very significant because it's going to be a whole new thing.
Yeah, because this is going to follow him and they're going to be talking about all the things that and all the accusers and the settlement and all that stuff. But if Tony Busby kind of acquiesces and says, you know what, we'll put this wording in here, that he was in a bad place, that he made bad decisions, but we're not going to put any admission of him. Then they have Tony Busby, they have the plaintiff's attorney kind of backing up Deshaun's story a little bit legally.
And it's also kind of interesting because I do wonder, like when it comes to a settlement, like from an entertainment perspective, like Rusty Harden and Tony Busby saying stuff, I guess it's entertaining and it is news and it does just kind of show you know, what each attorney is thinking and what their line of thinking is. But I do wonder if it makes settlements more difficult because Tony Busby said a lot of stuff about Deshaun Watson so far to where he's already on record saying that. And then all of a sudden you're going to settle. I do wonder if this public playing it out in the public does kind of make getting a settlement more difficult because then all of a sudden past words can be brought up and all that. And you called him a predator. You called him this, that, whatever term he used. Yeah. I do wonder if all of this like, extra stuff and the extra stuff that comes with the Busby and the Rusty Harden experience, if it does kind of make a settlement more difficult.
I'm sure that's what's been going on. And let's keep this in mind. You're not just negotiating Deshaun Watson's future with the terminology in the settlement. Rusty Harden and Tony Busby don't want to, air quote, lose here either. They want their reputation to be strong. Like, see there, I did my job. They both want to walk away feeling as if the public acknowledges how good they were in this case. And that's hard to do. Tony Busby wants to walk away saying, see there, we got X amount of dollars, and Deshaun Watson admitted to this much. Rusty Harden wants to walk away saying, see, we reduced the value to this X amount of dollars, and we defended him good. Well, so it's a very sticky situation.
Very, 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 very sticky situation. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you. I talked about, you know, the 22 accusers and, for lack of a better term, throwing in the towel. when it comes to, you know, trying to figure out which accusers you want to settle with and not. 0373 on the text line brings up a very good point. Throwing in the towel might be a bad term in this situation.
This is true.
Towel talk probably not the best
thing. Good catch.
713-572-4610. David Culley meets with the media types over the weekend, and he breaks down the rookies, Davis Mills, and his first look at the veterans, which is going on down the street as we speak. You'll hear from the head coach of the Texans next.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
David Culley, passionate about Mexican food, generic about football. But there is some good news. He did kill something that has bothered myself, John Lopez, and a lot of the loopholes. Shout out to the loopholes. If you listen, you are one. He did kill a Bill O'Brien theory of the past about rookies that I was very, very happy that he killed, because I thought it was a meat-headed, borderline senior in high school, fraternity, Hayes pledge type of mindset that I thought just kind of meathead Bill O'Brien. Rookies don't know anything. David Culley does not believe that, which I think is a good thing. Don't know what kind of coach he'll be, but he at least doesn't have that philosophy. Here was David Culley over the weekend after he got his first look at the rookies. By the way, the Texans down the street right now, they're getting a look at the vets. Not Deshaun Watson, but they are getting a look at the vets. Here was David Culley holding court, talking football, Mexican food, and many other things over the weekend.
David, we haven't spoken to you since the first of 22 lawsuits was filed against Deshaun Watson. Do you expect him to be at mini camp or OTAs?
We have nothing to say about that situation at this time. Kyle and ownership a few weeks back indicated about how our organization feels about the situation. I think when Nick was on not long ago, we mentioned that he also mentioned that the legal process is in effect right now, and we're gonna respect that and gonna go from there.
But do you expect to see him this offseason at all? Like, regardless of the legal issues?
I have nothing to say about that at this time.
Okay. Coach Culley, how's it going?
I'm going fine, Brandon. How about you?
Doing well, thank you.
Good to see you.
Good to see you as well. Thanks for asking. I wanted to ask just real quick if you could go over the five draft picks and just give us your quick assessment of them.
You call out the name first and I'll go over them. Who you want first?
You could go in order. Davis Mills, Nico Collins, Brevin Jordan.
Davis Mills, Nick's staff did a great job earmarking a guy that fit what a quarterback in this NFL is all about. This guy, obviously he didn't play as much football as some of the other guys because of the COVID situation in the Pac-12, but we really love what he's all about. We love all the intangibles that he has. He's a prototype NFL quarterback, and we feel good to have him. He's smart. He can make all the throws, and we feel good and feel fortunate that we were able to get him when we got him. Nico, again, I've got a couple of coaches on my staff that's got some background with him. Pep had him in Michigan. Davis had him at Davidson had him right there at who actually coached him, assistant receiver coach Ben Davidson. He is the prototype wide receiver, big, strong, 50-50 catch type guy in this league. And we feel like that, he'll bring that to us. And we're looking forward to that. Very tough kid. Very tough kid. Brevin, oh, my goodness. Let me tell you something. We feel like we got a steal with him, with where we got him. We felt like that guy probably would have been gone before the fifth round. But once we got to that point and he was there, I mean, it was a no-brainer with the ability that he has as far as being a prototype tight end in this business. Garrett Waller, loved him. Our people love what he's all about, you know. I mean, I'm talking about he's a football player. I mean, he is a flat-out football-playing Jesse, I'd like to say, you know, old term from the South. You've heard that term before. You know, and we love that. Roy, I mean, I'm telling you, he's down in the trenches. I mean, he's excellent there. We felt good when we got to that point of being able to get him. And once we got to that point, it was good. I mean, Lovey loved where he was.
Hey, David, you mentioned Pep a second ago. He obviously worked with Justin Herbert in Los Angeles last season. He had a really good rookie year. Just what do you think makes him a good position coach for a young quarterback in this league?
Well, he's been a good position coach for years in this business. I mean, he knows what he's doing. He knows about quarterback play. He's done it his whole career. He's coordinated it. He's been a quarterback coach. He knows the whole offense. He knows a variety of offenses. He's a heck of a teacher. If you go back and you look at all the guys that he's coached through his coaching career, you can see that one thing that we loved about having Pep here is that all those guys that he coached, whether they were young guys or guys that have been in the league, they all got better. And that's all you want out of your coaches, to get them better. And he's done that. And we're hoping for the same thing here.
He worked at Stanford with David Shaw. I believe they overlapped. Did he
have Yes, any, he did.
Yeah, what sort
yes,
of
he did.
Did he have when it came to Davis and making that pick?
Well, obviously, we had some inside on him because of Pep and because of David, because Pep actually coached him and we knew him. And that's just a comfort level in knowing that when you draft a guy like that, and, you know, he's had some things happen to him during his career because of the Pac-10 with the COVID situation. But we knew from David and Pep, and especially with David, who's obviously had some guys come out of there and gone on and done well also, that, you know, he knew exactly what we're looking for. He knew about what Davis is all about. And, you know, with Pep and him understanding exactly what we were looking for, we felt like he was a good fit, and we're fortunate enough to get him.
There are some coaches who kind of already – the rookies are fighting an uphill battle because they feel they might not know anything, and it's hard for them to get on the field. What's your philosophy on rookies playing early?
Well, here's the thing is if a rookie progresses the way he needs to progress, and if he's a good enough player and picks it up, picks the offense up or the defense up or what we're doing on special teams, you know, we're about competition here. And regardless of whether he's a rookie or he's a veteran, if he picks up what we're doing, he's doing the things that we want done. I've seen rookies through my career throughout this league that people felt like didn't have a chance end up playing right away. I've seen some rookies that people thought would play right away that played later. It's just a matter of the individual being able to come in and pick up the system and learn what we're doing. And if he's good enough to do it with the competition, then he's good enough to do it.
You guys watch the tape, you draft Davis Mills, you had a chance to study him, but what's it like to watch him throw in person? Just what are some of the impressions that you get just being around him, personality and the throwing and some of the things you see with his mechanics?
Well, the one thing we liked about him, and Pep talked about this when we were sitting down with Nick talking about what he was all about in the evaluation process, is he's very accurate. You know, he gets it out on time. He's very smart. He understands the passing game because they do a very good job of it there at Stanford. He's been in a very good play action, run action type pass game, which we have had a history of doing here. And he fit what our model was from wanting to have a guy at that position.
What's been the working relationship you have with Nick, and talk about how that's evolved in your 3.5 months on the job?
Well, I tell you what, when I first got the job here, I knew what Nick was all about. I knew that he is all about football. You know, he's all about winning. His record speaks for itself from where he's been. And he knew about me. He knew about what my situation has always been and how I have approached things throughout my career in this league. And we're like-minded that way in what we believe a football team should be about and how a football team should be run. And it's been really good, John, from that standpoint, where I understand where he wants to go. He understands where I want to go. And we've kind of meshed that. And we're basically all in with what we're doing right now.
Can I ask one more right quick? How important is it for you guys to get a good look at Davis Mills this season because of how much that could impact your 2022 draft?
Well, we're not looking at it like that, John. We're looking at it like there's going to be competition at all positions. This is a new football team here. And basically, we've created competition all around this football team. And not just at the quarterback position, but basically at all positions. And that's why you see so many guys on this football team right now that hadn't been here, is that we're going to let things play out in training camp. We're going to go from there. And then the best players that give us the best chance to win are the ones that we're going to put on the football field, regardless of position.
Hey, Coach, Tim Kelly is obviously back as your OC this year, back here for him. Is this essentially his offense with input from others, but essentially the offense that he's put together the last couple of years?
Well, the offense that he's had has been a group thing even previously. And there's a couple of guys that were on the staff here with him before. And basically with some of the new guys that we have brought in, basically to bring in some new ideas to basically take what Tim has been doing for the last few years and just make it better. But Tim has done a tremendous job. He knows exactly what he wants to get done in this offense. As a collective group, they've sat down, and Tim has been great with this about getting ideas from everybody in that room. And usually the best offenses in this league are usually offenses that are from a whole offensive group that are putting in the input and basically doing what you feel like your personnel can do. And during this offseason, they've done a really nice job of doing that. And Tim's done a nice job of incorporating that.
How did it work out that you brought him back as the OC when I'm assuming you had little knowledge of him or what he'd done as a coach, just having not been here?
Oh, I knew about him. I've played against them for the three years at other places that I've been. And I knew they've been very good offensively. And I liked what he's all about. And the thing about when I interviewed Tim and we talked to Tim about, I love the mindset. I'm going back to, again, just like when Nick brought me in here, this organization brought me in here. We had some like-mindedness as far as how we look at things. And I felt the same way with Tim when I talked to Tim about winning football. And so, again, that was a part of also of why Tim is also still here.
All right. Thanks, Coach.
You're welcome.
What is the like-mindedness? That's David Culley over the weekend. Vets on the field right now. Deshaun Watson not in attendance. What's the like-mindedness about winning football?
You know what? I'm so glad you brought that up. Oh, I was thinking the same thing there.
Come on.
It's kind of a variation of mutually agree to part ways, that there is no such thing. There really is no such thing unless they're separate as like-mindedness in terms of what direction a football team is going to go. Someone's got to make the decision. The final decision ends up with someone. You know, you don't go into a room with David Culley, Jack Easterby, Nick Caserio, Pep Hamilton, and Tim Kelly, let's say, you know, talk about the offense. And say, well, we're all in agreement. This is how the offense is going to look. This is how we're going to handle Davis Mills. No, someone ultimately makes that final call, right? It's like when people mutually agree to part ways, there's no such thing, because someone usually says, no, you're out, or no, I'm out. So who's making that call? Where does the final decision on this like-mindedness come from? Who do you think it is?
I don't know why Tim Kelly's here.
I think it's Nick Caserio. He cut his teeth as a coach. He's been talking like a coach in terms of the players that he's brought in. He hired Pep Hamilton, in essence, even though I know David Culley had a say in it. Pep Hamilton and some of these other guys with Jack Easterby's influence, because if Jack Easterby's wasn't an influence, I don't know if Lovie Smith would be here. I don't know if some of these other guys would be here. So this whole like-mindedness is basically, I agree with what Nick and Jack are telling me what to do. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think that's surprising.
Yeah.
I just don't. The Tim Kelly thing is weird to me. Like, tell me, I've been here ever since Tim Kelly's been here. Like, tell me what Tim Kelly's offense is.
It's Bill O'Brien's. Bill O'Brien's offense. But that's the difference. And that's why I go back to the whole like-mindedness thing. Pep Hamilton isn't here just to coach receivers. And he admitted it in that.
Well, he's a quarterback coach anyways.
Heard. Right. Well, I'm sorry, quarterbacks. He's not just here just to coach quarterbacks. He's here to install things into this offense. That's very clear. He made it clear in his comments there that everybody's, they're going to add some things. They're going to change some things on the offense. Well, Tim Kelly, I'm sure he's certainly receptive to suggestions, but he's not making that last call. I seriously doubt David Culley is making that last call. I think it's Nick Caserio, which I don't mind. I'm just telling you the way it is.
So what is Tim Kelly? You think he was just kept around in case Deshaun Watson ended up staying? because Deshaun Watson said he liked Tim Kelly. Was this kind of a bone for Deshaun Watson? Or do they truly look at Tim Kelly and say, man, this guy might have something. This guy might be an offensive innovator. I didn't watch that offense last year and say, you know what, Tim Kelly really put this together. I looked at it and said, Deshaun Watson saved all butts.
Yeah.
And on top of that, they couldn't run the rock. Whether it was schematic, whatever, they could not run the rock. And I also heard Tim Kelly praise David Johnson when it was the biggest eye roll that I had last year in a year with many eye rolls. Did they really look at this and say Tim Kelly knows what he's doing? Or was this just basically a, let's keep the system similar because it is similar to the one that they run in New England because Bill O'Brien basically copied that and Tim Kelly was tugging on Bill O'Brien's shirt for 10 years. Was that it? Was it an attempted bone for Deshaun Watson, or do they really look at Tim Kelly and say this guy might have something?
I mean, the Deshaun Watson factor might be a little bit of a factor, but I think the bigger thing is Tim Kelly is subservient. He's just happy to be here. You know, he'll do what they say. He'll say, yes, sir, and you're going to run this offense from Pep Hamilton, these plays. Nick Caserio is going to have this influence over what you're calling, et cetera, et cetera. He's just a good soldier, kind of a pushover, if you will. In the context of what this staff is going to look like. Because keep in mind, and I still believe this, I don't think Tim Kelly or David Culley will be around in 2 years, maybe three.
Tim Culley or David Culley.
David Culley, yeah. Or Tim Kelly.
Okay. The other thing, when you look at these rookies, they made some signings to me that didn't make a lot of sense at certain positions. Like, I think the Conley signing out of Jacksonville, I like that. Big receiver, relatively young. Some upside, but like Dante Moncrief and, you know, signings like that. Like, if there's a tie, it has to go to the rookie, right? Because in the past, I think it was the opposite with Bill O'Brien.
Not necessarily.
So you're telling me if Dante Moncrief and Nico Collins are
in the same area,
you got to go to Nico, right? I mean, what's the point of Dante? What are you getting with Dante Moncrief being here? I'm serious.
I think that they're going to look at some of the experience that he has, and maybe that's
the tiebreaker. Like, well, the last few years,
that's true, no question. But I think they're going to keep in mind they also don't want to win. They want to develop players, and Nico Collins is going to get on the field, but they understand where the future of this organization is, and it's in draft picks.
I feel like they might want to win.
No, David Culley wants to win. Tim Kelly wants to win. Players want to win, but management does not. Otherwise, they wouldn't hire David Culley. Flat out. I mean, they wouldn't have kept Tim Kelly. They would have kept some of these veterans and re-signed some of these players rather than just go to the street. What the Texans are doing right now is they're getting a bunch of players. I think they're at 88 players right now, maybe 90 already. And they're just throwing it all up against the wall to see what sticks.
But do you think that's a desire or you think that's an acceptance?
It's a philosophy.
But is it a philosophy or is it just an acceptance?
It's a philosophy. They recognized that Deshaun Watson was gone, J.J. was gone, Will Fuller was gone a long time ago. They recognized, you know, that, yeah, Zach Cunningham's really, really good. And certainly they've signed some decent potential, you know, players on defense. But their philosophy – and let's be – I'll be
– But isn't the philosophy more of an acceptance than a desire? Because I think they're accepting the fact that the roster that they have is just not good enough to go out there and win at a high level. I don't think it's like some sort of initiative. I think, I agree somewhat with what you're saying about David Culley, but I think they could hire Bill Belichick in his prime, and I don't know how much he could win with this roster. So is it more of an acceptance that you hire Dave Culley because you have this roster more so than a desire? Or maybe they could be linked. Maybe I'm pulling strings here.
Once Deshaun Watson was gone, JJ was gone, and then you knew Will Fuller and others were going to be gone, then it became a desire. I hope it did. I hope they're just not thinking that this can win, because this cannot win. All due respect to these guys, these are NFL players. They worked hard to get here. But this team cannot win the way you need to win in the NFL. So, yeah, I'm giving them credit. And, by the way, I would do the exact same thing. If I knew that those guys were gone and where we were in terms of a cap situation, I'd be, air quote, tanking as well. David Culley's going to try to win every game, but he can't. Tim Kelly's going to try to call plays with the help of the other staff members to win games, but they can't. I mean, not consistently, not at a playoff level. These players are going to bust their asses. The competition that he keeps talking about is great. I think they are going to get the best of this bunch to play better than normal because there is that kind of competition. But this roster cannot win at a playoff caliber level. So that's the philosophy. Let's throw them out there. Do your best. We know you're going to lose, and we're going to get draft picks.
That's the trust the process philosophy. Elsewhere in the division, there are some teams with some high hopes, but is one of the main offseason acquisitions at the most important position already breaking down? We'll discuss around the league next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.